Whether you're starting a game or starting your day, you need to pick a starting lineup. And you're going to want the starter from Jack Black. Loaded with the superior skincare the pros love, Kings fans can get the starter for just $10, shipping included. Available exclusively at getjackblack.com with the code TEAMJB, the starter has four of Jack Black's best-selling skincare and shave products, plus a full-sized intense therapy lip balm, SPF 25, in natural mint. Here's to the winning combination for 2022. The LA Kings and the starter from Jack Black. $10 plus free shipping. Available at getjackblack.com with the code TEAMJB while supplies last.
You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings. Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men. The LA Kings have a complicated summer in front of them. Lots of decisions to be made. Lots of options on how to proceed. It can be a bit overwhelming, so Zach Dooley and I tried our best to lay it all out for you. This is the 10 biggest questions facing the LA Kings this offseason. All right, we have a busy offseason to get to and to help lay out a roadmap for the next 3 months. Zach Dooley, how are you doing today, Zach?
Jesse, doing great. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I got to travel later this week. I'm not super looking forward.
Okay.
That's fair. So I've got travel anxiety looming.
All right. Before we get going, what's your travel show? What are you going to be doing on the plane? What do you have, Ben? Sleep. You can watch Severance for the 25th time, or do you have
I sleep on planes. One of my few superpowers is that I can fall asleep pretty much anywhere at any time, almost by force of will. And when I get on a plane, I'm usually asleep before the wheels pull up.
That is an outstanding trait to have.
I love it. And I wake up, speaking of severance, I sever myself on a plane. And I wake up when the wheels touch down. The only problem is I have like a 4-hour layover in the middle of the country. So that's going to be
brutal.
So let's get into it. I was going to talk about how I go back and forth between calling you Zach and Dooley in my professional and personal lives. But that's not as interesting as the 10 biggest questions facing the LA Kings in this offseason. The first one, Zach, I had almost put as a honorable mention because it doesn't really have anything to do with the Kings, but I do think it is tremendously important, or at least it has the potential to be tremendously important to the Kings. So we're going to start off with that, number 10, and that is, what will the other teams in the division do this offseason? There are some big, big-name coaches out there that could be available to be hired. There are some big-name free agents that could be signed. There are big players looking to be traded, potentially. And there are some teams in this division that didn't make the playoffs that will undoubtedly be doing everything in their power to make the playoffs.
Sounds like you're specifically circling around the Vegas Golden Knights with a few of those statements.
Yes, naturally,
they're the team with the biggest, highest profile opening at the head coach spot. They're also a team that has a lot of cap space tied into very few players, which kind of limits their flexibility going forward. So they're certainly the most interesting team in the division, right? They were a team that was a lock by everyone to make the playoff. They didn't. They fired the head coach. Obvious changes are coming. They have to get rid of some players just to be cap compliant. They won't be able to assign a guy like Riley Smith, who is an original player there. So they're certainly the most interesting team when you look at all the different factors that you just mentioned.
Yeah, and Vancouver is also looming. Yep. I mean, that's really the issue in my mind. I think... Even though it may not play out like this, I think you could be excused for believing that Seattle, Anaheim, and San Jose will not make massive improvements in the offseason. They may, who knows? But, you know, I think the common belief is probably that those three teams will continue on their path. But Vegas and Vancouver have an opportunity to massively improve next season. So I just thought it bared stating at the top before we dive into the decision that the Kings have to make about themselves.
Yeah, it's fair. And Vancouver is the weird one, right? Because their start and their tenure under Bruce Boudreau, vastly different. If you forecast their Boudreau games out over 82, you've got a team that makes the playoff picture a lot more complicated in the Pacific. So they're definitely a team to watch. Anaheim is a sneaky one because they have an absurd amount of cap space. They also have a lot of holes that need to be fixed before they become a playoff team, but they have the goaltender in place. They have a new GM who seems to be willing to make necessary changes, even if they're unpopular. So they're maybe a team to watch just because of the pieces that they have and the space that they have. But I agree, Vegas is super interesting. Starts with their head coach, and then it comes down to how they decide to manage their big contracts and their personnel. And then Vancouver's a wild card. They really are. They have a guy like JT Miller, who was always rumored to be moved. And then they have the core in place. They have a Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, who are studs and very interesting pieces in Vancouver. See how they can put it together with a stable head coach.
A friend of mine is a fan of an East Coast team and was talking about his team's need for defense and was wondering whether or not his team could pry Quinn Hughes loose. And he's a New Jersey Devils fan. And I said, unfortunately, the only player he wanted all the Hughes brothers united under one
makes
team.
Sense. That'd be cool.
It would be very cool. And I said, unfortunately, the only player I can think of on New Jersey that would even come close to being enough to pry Quinn Hughes out of Vancouver would be Jack Hughes. And then you're just right. back in the same spot. All right. So let's get to the Kings, because that's what we're here to talk about. And so the first topic we're going to tackle, the second biggest storyline or question facing the LA Kings this offseason, is what will happen at the draft. And the Kings have 6 picks, no 7th rounder. It was traded for Torrey Stetcher. Their 3rd round pick belongs to the Pens, which, as it turns out, is only 2 picks behind where they would have picked ordinarily, which they traded for Victor Arvidsson. And the first pick they have in the draft is 19th overall. Zach, I'm not going to pretend to have any idea who the Kings should take, but it will matter what happens at the draft one way or the other.
And I'm going to guess it'll be a little bit different than last year's draft, because last year's draft was a COVID year. Scouting was very different. The Kings took a straight up quality over quantity approach. They traded up 3 times. They picked 4 times between rounds 1 and round 3. They picked 0 times from rounds 4 to round 7, which was so cool for someone writing articles who could leave at about noon on the second day of the draft. That was
right.
Kind of hope they do it again. But that feels like a one-off, right? It feels like a strictly last year thing. Kings, like you said, picks in rounds 1 through 6, several deep areas of the prospect pool, but also a couple areas where they could probably improve. So we'll see how they go. The Kings have done a really good job in the last few years at the draft of getting some quality prospects. But I think the theme of this episode will be the Kings can really do whatever they want in these scenarios. They can package and trade. They can make the picks as wanted. They can trade up. They can trade down. They can just about do whatever they feel that they want to do, which is a pretty cool thing going into an offseason.
I've seen a few people in various places suggest that the Kings ought to or would be strongly advised to or might be even strongly motivated to trade their first round pick. And the thought process is, well, you have this prospect pool full of talented players, so who cares, another first round pick, ho-hum. And I personally strongly disagree with that. They may wind up doing it.
Certainly that reasoning is very disagreeable.
If the situation presents itself where the first overall pick is better used traded for a specific asset, I'm listening. But
yeah. And if you're sitting there saying like, hey, we want, the Kings need to make that one big external acquisition to get that player, you probably have to trade that pick.
Yes.
At a certain extent. Right. So
when the time comes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be this year, but if you want to make that huge blockbuster move, not saying that they need to, but if you do, it doesn't necessarily have to be this pick, doesn't have to necessarily be this year, but eventually you're probably going to have to trade a first. Doesn't mean that you have to trade a first just because you've picked in the first round each of the last few years, which is rare for Kings fans because they didn't pick in the first round for like 8 years prior.
Right, right. But I'm watching Tampa utterly decimate the rest of the league again. Yeah. And I'm seeing guys like, you know, Ross Colton, who was a 4th round pick of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I can't, you know, what percentage of their roster came through Syracuse? And they did, I'm not sure that Tampa ever did panic or make that big, you know, swing for the fences outside the organization move. They traded first round picks for like role players and depth players who are tremendously important and good for them. But I'm not, I don't know. I quite like what Tampa did. So, but the point is, again, the draft, whatever happens at the draft, it will be important. One thing I do want to throw out there, not that the Kings would ever come anywhere close to this number, but there is a 90 player reserve list limit and a 50 player contract limit, which means that an organization can only have 50 players under contract. That includes players playing at the AHL level. Now, 18, 19 year olds who are playing in juniors are so for example, they signed Brant Clark to an entry-level contract. His contract doesn't count towards the 50-player limit, but every other player does. All the guys in Ontario do. So again, not that the draft would push the Kings perilously close to either of those, certainly not the 90-player reserve list max, but it is sort of another issue that sort of looms over all of these decisions, is that at some point, you know, I think at the moment, I have it in my notes here somewhere. At the moment, like as of today, with all of the restricted and unrestricted free agents, they have 32 players under contract for next year. And that includes Brant Clark, Francesco Pinelli, and Martin Kromiak, who I believe are all eligible to not count next year.
Pinelli, Clark, eligible to not count. Kromiak, I guess, I think Kromiak, the expectation will be that he would turn pro. Playing the AHL.
I would assume, but I think he might have an overage year left. Regardless. Yeah,
they all do, right?
Regardless, they have 30 guys, basically. They're not in any danger of pushing 50, but if they were to bring back every free agent, I think they go up to like 49. So if you're doing one-for-one replacements or bringbacks on every restricted and unrestricted free agent, all of a sudden that 50 ceiling starts getting a lot closer. So we're going to move on from the draft. And then we're going to get into the big ones here. Right off the hop, Adrian Kempe needs a new contract, Zach. And, you know, this is a phrase that we've been using all year long in all sorts of different situations, but you could tell me any number of years and any amount per year for Adrian Kempe, and I think I'd believe you.
Number one priority, right? Rob Blake said it. Clearly both sides are on the same page. Adrian Kempe said he wants to sign a long-term deal here. Rob Blake says the Kings want to sign Adrian Kempe. Said that the sides have began negotiations during the season, decided to put it off to the offseason, because when it comes to an RFA, there's no rush. There's no deadline, at least none that is anywhere near here. So it sounds like everyone is on the same page. And then the million-dollar question is, which you said we could speculate for days, is what is the number of years? What is the cap hit? As you'd probably expect, one definitely impacts the other.
Yeah, and he does have arbitration rights. And there is a deadline for him to file for arbitration. But given the fact that the player and the organization have both stated it's a priority, he scored 35 goals. I can't see this going to arbitration.
And that would imply a one-year deal, which would mean he would go to unrestricted free agency next year, which I don't think, at least from everything that we've seen and heard, does not appear to be what either side is looking for. They want to make a commitment.
Yeah, and the Kings have the cap space and the and the roster, you know, limit is not, like I said, not an issue. And he's the top line. He's the leading goal scorer. He played on the top line, played on the top power play. He's drafted by the team first round pick of the team. So it's just a question of how long and how much, because that will at least slightly impact other decisions made. And that will bring us to our next question, which is Mikey Anderson, another player that is a restricted free agent that the organization has stated that they want to bring back. And I would imagine Mikey wants to come back. Although I think I've decided, as per our last conversation, I think I'm just going to start calling him Mike. And we'll see if it sticks. I haven't talked to him about this. I don't know. Maybe he likes Mikey, but I think I'm just going to start calling him Mike Anderson.
So, I think he likes Mikey.
I think he does. But Mikey likes it. It's a reference for an older generation. So Anderson needs a new contract. And just going to throw this out there again. I see a ton of people speculating about what next year's roster will look like. And, you know, if we go get this player, we go get that player. And they have Mike Anderson on the second pair or the third pair. He's playing with Drew Doughty.
That's right.
You know,
like I, that The only reason that he didn't this year was because Drew Doughty only played 39 games.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, they did not play a game together all year when they were both in the lineup.
I was working on an episode of the podcast in the middle of the season where I was collecting quotes from Anderson and Doughty and McClellan and Blake and everybody in the organization, not just about the two of them as a pair, but about other pairs. I went back and dug up a bunch of Blake's old comments about Matthias Nordstrom. I found the footage of Blake's jersey retirement ceremony where he invited Nordstrom to stand next to him because he said, you know, for all those years, number 14 was to my left, so he should be here tonight. This whole thing. And then, of course, both of them got hurt. And so there was really no proper context for that episode. But I'm just saying,
here,
like, Mikey Anderson and Drew Doughty are a pair now. It's canon. Yeah. I'm locking it. But he needs a new contract.
He does. And you said with Kempe, you could say any number, year, any number. I think that's accurate. With Anderson, it's probably a little bit more refined because the Kings have signed Matt Roy and Sean Walker to their second contracts over the last year or so. Roy signed a 3-year deal at just over $3 per year. Walker, a 4-year deal, just under $3 per year. Not to say Anderson will be necessarily in that range, but there is some history to how the Kings have handled those second contracts with defensemen. Anderson, not a point producer by any means, but has established himself as a very reliable, sure-handed guy on the back end who I think that the Kings will want to make sure, you know, they take care of. So I think that there's at least some precedent on, like, here's how they took care of sort of similar players internally. So we have a little bit of a bar on what that might mean.
And another issue that I'm not sure that it pertains as much to Mike Anderson as it does to Adrian Kempe, but the issue of free agency years that you're buying. So free agency for NHL players now, unrestricted free agency, excuse me. There's an equation based on how many games and how many years you've played, but roughly 27 years old, 28 years old is when a player reaches unrestricted free agency, regardless of draft status and all that. And so when a player, Kempe or Anderson's age in their early 20s, or in Kempe's case, mid 20s, when they're looking to sign a long-term contract, the question of how far into their unrestricted free agency will this contract take them sometimes gets factored in, usually by the agent, because the agent, you know, if Mikey Anderson signs an eight, I just called him Mikey. If Anderson signs an eight-year deal, which is allowed, that would bring him up to 30 years old, meaning he would be quote unquote sacrificing 3 years of unrestricted free agent negotiations. And so the thought process is you'd want to pay him more. You're buying those years of unrestricted free agency. Like I said, I think it probably matters more to Kempe than it does to Anderson, because I'm not sure that Anderson would ever be a highly sought after free agent, even though his value in my mind is tremendous. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the profile of an expensive free agent.
Agree. It's a different kind of player, right?
Right.
Especially, you know, the difference too is Adrian Kempe, like you mentioned, 1 year away from UFA, Mikey Anderson several years away. So definitely different situations. But the message was pretty clear that both are priorities and both, you know, they want to take care of both players.
Yeah. And Anderson, I always sort of chuckle when I see comments like, well, you can find a player like that anywhere. And that article that I've referenced a number of times from The Athletic listing him as, I think, the eighth best shutdown defenseman in the league. You can't find players like that anywhere.
No.
You can find skill sets like that anywhere. But I think people are prone to making the mistake of identifying players by their skill sets, not by their impact. And
Anderson's, or by their point totals, right?
Like, yes, exactly.
You can find a player who appears to be a depth defenseman anywhere, but that to call Mikey Anderson, that would be a major disservice to what he brings.
Agreed. We're going to soft transition from Mikey Anderson to the left side of the defense, which is our next topic. And this one is
interesting.
Yeah. Both sides of the defense. The reason we severed another severance reference, the defense into the left and the right side was more than just, you know, the obvious, it's creates two topics, but the left side of the defense this year was Anderson, Bjornfoot, Mata, and Edler. Edler missed a tremendous amount of time due to injury. Anderson missed not a tremendous amount of time due to injury, but time.
A lot. Good amount. Yeah.
And Mata started as a healthy scratch and down the stretch was arguably the Kings' second or third best defenseman.
It's interesting. And then Bjornfoot started in the lineup every day, found himself on the outside, you know, after his own injury at the end of the year. So it's interesting, especially when you consider that you have the young duo of Anderson and Bjornfoot who are under team control for several years. And then the other two are UFAs. So you have to make a decision on those two players. And I think the general consensus coming into this offseason would be the Kings would move on from both. No problem is what it is. Thank you for your time here.
Both being Edler and Mata.
Edler and Mata. And you have to think that both of those players have maybe changed that narrative a bit because they've both been such good fits, you know, very reliable for both, solid veterans who have clearly contributed. Not to say that the Kings will bring either or both back, because you want to see growth. You might want to see a different skill set added on the left side. But it's certainly a different conversation today than it was in October if you had this conversation. And I think that's important to point out.
I think it's a different conversation than it was in January and March and April. I mean, if you told me tomorrow that the Kings were bringing back all four guys and that we would start 2022-23 season with Anderson on, you know, as your number one lefty and then a rotating, you know, usage of Bjornfoot, Mata and Edler, I would be okay with that because Mata seems to have settled into a role that suits him. Edler proved his value when healthy, and Bjornfoot is still, is he 21 yet or is he still just 20?
I think he just turned 21 end of this year. So exceptionally young with already 100 plus NHL games.
And I understand that people wanted him to be, I'm not entirely sure what the expectation of Bjornfoot was, but I mean, I know there was talk a long time ago of him being Drew Doughty's partner and we hear about his legs. And so maybe the thought was that he would become that prototypical puck moving. I'm not entirely sure, but he's so young and so I would say his skill set is diverse enough and he's young enough that he could be turn into anything.
He has so many tools, right? Like you can see them, see the legs, you see his hockey sense, you see all these different things in what he could be. And it's also important to remember, like, defensemen have that slower curve sometimes where they might not hit their stride for a couple extra. I mean, there's no better example of why to be patient than Adrian Kempe. It's a different position, but he's what, 25 and broke out. Like, everyone developed at their own pace. You've seen enough from Toby Bjornfoot where you're like, this guy's got something. Like, this guy can already, he's already a player at this level and he's got some potential. So it's an interesting conversation because that creates four for three spots. But it's certainly, I think the biggest takeaway is it's just a different thought process maybe now than it was at different points in the year because of what each of those guys have brought.
I'm going to make a minor correction there. It's four for four spots because you have a healthy scratch.
Well, three spots in the lineup.
Yes. But that's why I said, you know, like Edler is a bit up there in age and Bjornfoot is young and unproven despite his, you know, 100 games played. So if you told me that, you know, Mikey Anderson was your number one left D and Edler and Mata and Bjornfoot were going to swap out as the matchup dictated, you know, I'm okay with that. And I understand that there are other lefty out there that people think, you know, they could get either by trade or free agency. And we'll talk about that later, but I would be perfectly fine. And I want to touch on the age thing real quick, because Mikey Anderson and Toby Bjornfoot are not that far apart in age, but but what was asked of them was sufficiently different enough. Like Mikey Anderson's game in my mind was always tailor-made to play with Drew Doughty. You know, I just am personally of a belief that your Rob Scuderi's, your Sean O'Donnell's, that kind of player, you know, your Derek Forbert's, your Mikey Anderson's, those are the kind of players that thrive and help Drew Doughty thrive. I understand that there was a year and a half where Jake Muzzin was on the left with Drew Doughty and every, you know, and they won a cup. And so everybody is now addicted to that model, but they want a dangerous cup that way. They want a safe cup with Rob Scuderi. But Bjornfoot is not Anderson is right. Sort of my point. Right. And so Bjornfoot was asked to pair with, when he was asked to pair with Matt Roy, it was a great pairing. When he was asked to pair with Sean Dursey, it was a less great pairing. And right, the message there is Bjornfoot is the young, Bjornfoot's a kid. I mean, he's literally a kid. When you pair him with another kid who likes to run and gun and gamble like Sean Dursey, the results are going to be less stellar than when you pair him with a steady Eddie like Matt Roy. And at the end of the season, the Kings needed what they needed. And so right decisions were made, but I don't think you should. There was, I can't believe I'm about to say this out loud, but there was a brilliant TikTok I saw the other day, Zach.
Where, I didn't see it.
Well, good. You're saving yourself a tremendous amount of time and productivity. But the message of the video essentially was people tend to think that the way it ended is the way it was. And that's not always the case. And I think Toby Bjornfoot had a much better season than you would think if you just looked at the way his season ended. And I would hate to see any decisions made by the organization based exclusively on how the season ended.
And I think that the way that the organization has made decisions over the last 3 years would suggest that that won't be the case, right? They don't make long-term decisions off of, we'll say, short-term problems, for lack of a better word. They make long-term decisions off of long-term solutions. I think that you could say the same thing about Quentin Byfield or Gabe Vilardi or even Rasmus Kupari to an extent. Those guys didn't play every game in the postseason. Jordan Spence, like, they're still in the plans just because they didn't factor in maybe to all seven games against Edmonton. Like, it's a very different equation going into next year. And I think that'll be, you know, certainly taken into account. It'll certainly be viewed with the longer lens than just a seven game sample. Yeah.
And you mentioned Jordan Spence. So that's going to bring us to the right side of the defense, which is equally as fascinating as the left, but infinitely more complicated, I think. Because the only thing I know for sure is that Drew Doughty will play number one right D for the LA Kings next season. I think it's safe to say that Matt Roy will be the second pair right defense, but I wouldn't stake any money on that just because things change and I don't gamble like that. And then after that, I have no idea what the right side of the Kings defense at any level of the organization will look like next year, not because there are no options, but because there are so many options.
Yeah. And so many options that you have to really analyze them. And they're options for different reasons. Like Sean Walker, established NHL player, but he's coming off of a major knee injury. There's always that factor of how does he reintegrate. There's also the factor with him that he has played the left more than any of the other players on the right. When you look at how the disparity is it inconceivable to say, oh, maybe Sean Walker plays the left? I don't think it is, but he's a player you have to see in camp, see how he's progressed, see where he's at that point, because he only played what, five games this past year and they were all in October. Then you've got, I think it's fair for this conversation to lump together Sean Dursey and Jordan Spence, both offensive first players who have proven that they can play at the NHL level, but are not established NHL veterans like the other three. No injury concerns with either of those two, so it's different. Both have said, hey, like, I can play at this level. They bring different things, but they've proven that they're NHL caliber. But you don't just fall off the face of the earth because you get injured. And when you put that into consideration, you're probably talking number four and number five on the depth chart. At this time. And then you've got the young trio. You have Brent Clark, Brock Faber, Helge Granz. Granz had a nice pro season in AHL Ontario, but still probably a couple years away. Still very young for even that league at 19. Then you have Faber playing another year of NCAA hockey, not a factor at this time. And then Brent Clark, who is another wild card. He's 19. He can only play in the NHL or the OHL. An interesting guy to watch during camp, because if I recall, he missed the entirety of this year's camp with mono. So it's a very interesting picture because we just named eight guys for three, maybe four spots.
Yeah. Making it somewhat easier is the fact that Jordan Spence and Helge Grons can play in Ontario without complication. Sean Durzi is a restricted free agent. Mm-hmm. So some decision has to be made. It doesn't have to be made about Sean Durzi exclusively. And I'll reference back to the left side of the defense conversation, because we said, you know, there's four guys for three roster spots. You can have guys play different sides, obviously. So now we're looking at Durzi, Mata, Edler, all need new contracts.
Anderson too.
Yes, and Anderson.
As we talked about,
Thank you. I was just assuming he's going to be back and play. But Bjornfoot, so hold on, let me pull up my thing. Okay, Bjornfoot, Doughty, Roy, and Walker are under contract and presume and available to play for the Kings, although Bjornfoot could theoretically go back to Ontario. Spence and Grons can go back to Ontario. Durzi needs a new contract. Anderson needs a new contract. Walker could play the left to make room for Brant Clark, but that would mean not bringing back Mata or Edler or sending Bjornfoot to Ontario. There are all sorts of ways.
Endless combinations, right?
Yeah, and what you really have to sort of decide is... And all of it just sort of boils down to where what does the organization think is most important? Is it continuity? Is it experience? Is it development? You know, if it's development, well, then you keep Bjornfoot, you bring up Clark, and you know, you deprioritize veterans. If it's continuity, then maybe you don't bring Clark in. Maybe you let him stay in the OHL for another year. If it's defense, well, then Edler takes priority over, you know, Clark, if that can even be a decision that gets made. If it's offense, then you want guys like Walker and Clark, who are, you know, going to be more, and Durzi, sorry. And I mean, it's, I don't know what the answer is, but it is going to be fascinating. And this is the one thing where I don't envy the decision makers, because I don't even know what I think they ought to do. And I'm pretty opinionated on everything else.
If you don't know what you think they should do, then nobody should have their own take. Yeah. Right. But it's something we'll talk about at the end of the show, which is there's the trade element, and there is the free agency element of, here's all the options they have internally. And I think we've now named 12 defensemen here in this conversation, probably nine of them with a legitimate claim to a spot, which already is too many. Then you factor in, oh, well, maybe the Kings want a power play contributor on the left side, just speaking out loud. And then so it's a different, it's going to be an interesting offseason in that department for sure. How do the Kings envision that group of seven looking? And as you found out this year, you can't have too many options either. So having a guy like Jordan Spence spend the start of the year in Ontario, you know, he's there, you know, he can come up when the inevitable six defensemen at once get injured.
Yeah, and some names we didn't mention, but that are also out there needing new contracts: Jacob Muvarari, Christian Wolanin, Austin Strand, and Troy Stetcher. Those guys may not all be back, but all of them played their role, contributed.
All played NHL games, right? Yeah. And it's actually unfair not to, like, you know, Troy Stetcher came in for a late round pick and was, you know, perfectly fine in his role.
4 points in three games in the playoffs, whatever.
Yeah, different organizational depth, and maybe it's a different conversation for him or a Strand or, you know, Christian Wolanin. I think very valuable in Ontario, proved he can play in the NHL. And, you know, Jacob Movarar, nothing but solid, an RFA that you would think is still in the plan. So a lot of names for not a lot of spots. And it's going to be pretty fascinating how the Kings decide to shape out that unit.
And I'll choose this point to reinsert the 50 contract limit issue again, because the Kings also, I'm going to include goaltending now in the goaltending and defense aspect of it, with Peterson, Quick, Ingham, and Renick all under contract next year. Bjornfoot, Doughty, Roy, Walker, Spence, and Grons, with, I'm assuming, Kim Nousiainen joining that group next year.
He's already signed.
Yeah, but I mean, I think he'll be playing in Ontario.
Yep.
That is 12 out of the 50 already. You're going to
need. You have an unhealthy obsession with the 50 contract limit that has never once come into play.
No, and it probably never will, but it's just one of those things that, that, I mean, it's come into play. I think, didn't Calgary have to play with 16 guys a couple of years ago or something? Anyway.
I don't think that was the 50 contract limit.
Well, maybe. Anyway, it's just sort of looming out there. At any rate, we're going to move on from the defense. And I will say this now, we're not, just heads up for everybody, we're not going to talk about the goalies. They have their goalies under contract. It's not, it's fine.
Kings have their NHL tandem, right?
And, yeah,
and exactly. We'll go from there.
Bad calls, dirty slashing. We expect a little bull on the ice. But you know when we can't stand it? When we're tracking packages. Looking up tracking numbers, shipping statuses that never get updated. We call bullshit. So we got Route. It's the free app that tracks everything you order online in one place. Route sends us real-time tracking updates, or we can pop into the app to see where our stuff is on an actual map. Download the Route app in the App Store or Google Play, or head to route.com to learn more. No bullshit, just great tracking.
So that then puts us into another bit of a hornet's nest, which is the RFA forwards, excluding Adrian Kempe, because he stands alone as a guy that they have clearly stated is a priority to bring back. He wants to come back. What we're really talking about is Jared Anderson Dolan, Carl Grundstrom, Brendan Lemieux, Gabriel Vilardi, and Leish Anderson, and Vladimir Kochev and Johan Södergren. But really, Anderson Dolan, Grundstrom, Vilardi, and Lemieux, I think, as having played a significant amount of time this season with value. All of those players need to be decided on. And I am opinionated about what ought to happen with those players. I'll keep most of it to myself. I will simply say Carl Grundstrom was tagged before the playoffs started by Jared Stoll, myself, a few others, as being a player who would have a game that translated well to the playoffs. And I think he proved that. I would not be the least bit surprised to see Carl Grundstrom in the Kings lineup to start next season.
Nope, I don't think I would either. Think his Todd McClellan being of the year, right? He didn't single out too many guys, but he said he and others said, you know, maybe that was our most improved player this year. A guy who went from really someone who didn't have a ton of consistency in 2021 to a guy who didn't have consistency this year outside of his control, meaning his role and his time in the lineup. But when he was in, he didn't do a heck of a lot to take himself out. He fell victim to circumstance pretty frequently, but when he was in, he was pretty effective. He got his top six opportunity in the playoffs. He converted on it. He capitalized. He's not a top six player when fully healthy for this team, but he's clearly proven he can be an impactful bottom six guy. Brings a lot of the same traits that the departing Dustin Brown leaves in terms of his on-ice play. Brown himself said as much, and I think he's a guy who has earned himself a spot next year.
There's a meme, whatever you want to call it, of Leonardo DiCaprio from the film Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm pretty sure that's the name of the film. He's watching a movie and he sees himself and he snaps and he points at the TV. And then now that's like, you know, that was all of Kings fandom when Dustin Brown started talking about all of the aspects of his game that he sees in Carl's game. Because when Grundstrom was acquired, Dustin Brown light was the tag. Like, that was the elevator pitch for Carl Grundstrom and has been for years. So there's that. The other players, specifically Gabriel Vilardi and Jared Anderson Dolan, this gets into the which centers are going to play wing conversation. And at the start of this season, you know, we talked about who's going to switch from center to wing, and Gabriel Vilardi was the player most frequently listed as switching to wing. They did switch him to wing, I think it's fair to say at this point. I don't know. And Anderson Dolan played a lot of wing, but also a lot of center in Ontario.
Pretty healthy mix, right?
Yeah, and did quite well, I should add, in Ontario. Off the top of my head, I want to say he had over 20 goals. He had 24 goals and 47 points in 54 games.
Really nice year
in Ontario. It was a great year. Yeah. 0 points in 7 games in the NHL, but again, was asked to do a very different thing. This all comes down to role and opportunity, right? I'm not sure how much opportunity there is for any player to play the kinds of roles that those players, and not just those, but Lemieux, Kachev, all of them. I'm not entirely sure how much opportunity there is for any player outside ads or not. This roster doesn't have as many free spaces as one might think.
Or certainly as many as it did last year, right? Last year, there were a lot more holes and a lot less solutions internally than you have now. There are still holes, or there are spots that are filled but could maybe be filled at a higher level, which would then other spots at a higher level. But you're right in that sense of last year. I think Rob Blake was asked about it, about, you know, external acquisitions. He's like, well, last year we had a lot of holes to fill. They had to fill 2C. They had to fill top six winger. They had to fill top 4D. And they did all of those things externally. They don't necessarily need all of that done this year because they did some last year. They saw some internal growth and expect more internal growth. So back topic, you know, I wouldn't see many reasons why an Anderson Dolan or a Vilardi wouldn't at the least be qualified, which is the question asked here, because of their versatility. They can play both positions and their potential. So I would, you'd have to think that they're both in that conversation to be on the qualified list, and then training camp is there for a reason to figure out, you know, where they slot in, whether it be AHL or NHL level.
Yeah, and let's clarify restricted free agents, because I think you said qualified, but I don't know that we necessarily laid out what that means. Restricted free agent is a free agent, but the team that owns their rights can doesn't have to offer them complex new contract. They can simply qualify them, which means offering them a one-year deal at 10% increase on what they made last year. And then the player doesn't have to sign that agreement, but if they don't, they don't play. And if they do sign it, or the team has the option of giving them a longer contract. So for example, let's just take Carl Grundstrom. The Kings could offer Carl Grundstrom 3 years at 1.5, whatever, which would be more than his qualifying offer. But you can offer them a qualifying offer. It retains their rights, but it pushes your deadline back. You know, you keep them in house, and then you can worry about the finances later. But again, I want to move away from the phrase holes and more on opportunity, because if we're looking at the lineup next year, I think it's fair to assume that Mora, Danault, and Arvidsson play as a line. I think it's fair to assume that Kopitar and Kempe play on the top line, whichever wing Kempe is on. And I think it's fair to assume that Quentin Byfield and Blake Lizotte play center. So you're looking at four center spots.
Now Alex Iafallo plays
a wing somewhere.
LW1, LW3, somewhere in there.
Right. Yep. So what you're really talking about is an opportunity for two wing spots in the top nine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, like I said, I don't know that those are holes per se, because they have a tremendous amount of forwards and there are options. We'll talk about later draft or or free agency. But it's, again, it's opportunity for any player to grab that opportunity. It could be Alex Iafallo, right? Alex Iafallo played with a separated shoulder. Maybe Kempe, Kopitar, and Iafallo find chemistry. You know, maybe Iafallo was given the opportunity and it works when he doesn't have a banged up shoulder. There were also two other players out there with separated shoulders that were never identified. So again, in my mind, it's opportunities, not holes. It's a subtle distinction, but
it's probably a distinction from last year to this year, right? Because last year there were holes. Like,
yes, agreed.
Ads needed to be made.
Yeah.
This year you have a lot of players who have an opportunity to maybe fill a larger hole than they did this year. Yeah. You can't bank on that growth for everyone, and there's only so many, you know, opportunities for everyone, but yeah, there are certainly players who could take that next step potentially and eliminate the need to bring someone in for certain spots.
I mean, I'm looking at, based on what I've got on my spreadsheet, there are four, if we're assuming Adrian Kempe is brought back. If Adrian Kempe is brought back, there's four wing opportunities heading into training camp. And there are players like Rasmus Kupari, Arthur Kaliev, if they're brought back, Anderson Dolan, Carl Grundstrom, Brendan Lemieux, Gabriel Vilardi, and potentially Leish Anderson, That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
You already said about 8 names. So
yes, and then there's also your Alex Turcotte, your Akil Thomas, your Samuel Fagamos, you know, Taylor Ward. I'll just throw out there randomly. Francisco Pinelli, Martin Kromiak, if these guys want to compete. Not to mention any trades or free agent acquisitions. So it's you know, we talked about last year how all the training camp battles. Those were interesting because there were so many spots that could be battled for. This year, the focus is going to be much narrower. And you know, you talked about how they last year's draft was they traded up to target specific players. I feel like that entire process will be applied to every aspect of the franchise right now. The structure of the team is in place. Now you have to narrowly focus on how to tweak specific elements of it.
And that's exactly what I think it was Blake, not McClellan, who said in his exit eval. He said, we got the structure in place. Now we have to upgrade the talent. I don't want to quote him on that. It was something to that effect, right? He said, we have the structure in place, and now we have to add talent into it, whether it be internal or externally.
And this is another place for me to reassert that judging players by their skill sets or points scored is not always the best way to evaluate them. You want to worry about their impact, right? So you look at Tampa Bay, they add, you know, somebody pointed out they completely changed their third line from last year's playoffs to this year's playoffs from, you know, in the calendar year from the playoffs of last year to this year, it's three new guys on the third line.
Yeah.
But the impact is the same, even though in a one-to-one comparison,
it's very different.
Yeah. So anyway, that is going to bring us to the UFA veterans on the team. And some of them we've already talked about in Mata and Edler. But there's also Andreas Athanasiou. And while these two names are probably less crucial, I do think they alter the conversation a little bit because Martin Furk and TJ Tynan are also unrestricted free agents. And Martin Furk is a player who could potentially contend for one of those wing spots. And Andreas Athanasiou is a player who at different times has played a huge role in singular games for the LA Kings. And so part of that conversation we're just having about, you know, narrowing down the identity and cementing the, you know, the structure of the team is what to do with those unrestricted free agents.
And we probably should have had this conversation almost before going into the whole lineup discussion, because you have individuals in this boat, right, who kind of factor into that. You know, Andreas Athanasiou played in the top six, or at least the top nine, for the majority of his year. Obviously, that year was not a ton of games due to injury in several of them. Extremely high talent level, a guy that when he put it all together and when he had a consistent run, you know, it was very noticeable. And a guy that at other times, I think, you know, didn't have that consistency game to game, as Todd McClellan said. So he's an interesting one because he signed a one-year deal to come back. He's now signed 2 1-year deals with the Kings. Do they feel as an organization that he is maybe the solution to that one of those winger spots, or do they go externally? And I think it's an interesting conversation. And you're also right that there's an importance to players like Furk and Tynan because both wore A's, if I'm not mistaken, in Ontario, maybe the two best players in the American Hockey League during the year, helped the Ontario Reign team that was very young otherwise find us. So guys like that are very important as well, even if not necessarily towards your opening night NHL roster.
But I mean, Martin Furk has NHL experience, right? Like I'm not saying that he's, you know, going to be, you know, number one right wing, but it, you know, he was brought here to play in the NHL, I believe, originally, and injuries and luck conspired to keep him, you know, out of a spot. And then he thrived in Ontario. But I mean, he has 124 games in the NHL, 20 goals, 41 points. He's
and scored one of the biggest goals of the year, right?
You know,
that Florida game. Who knows where things go without that goal? So it's guys who have impacted the team, even if not the ones you're most focused on. Like, guys at that level, like, had an impact on this season's Kings team for sure.
And Andreas Athanasiou, we heard, I believe it was Todd McClellan, talk about his skill level. I've had conversations with people, and I've heard probably every estimation of where Andreas Athanasiou should wind up of any player, you know, out there with a decision to be made. I've heard people say the obvious solution is Kempe and Athanasiou on Kopitar's wings. Let them fly and let Kopi be a third defenseman, essentially, and let Andreas Athanasiou and Kempe use their speed and danger on the rush. And I've heard, you know, like I said, every other, you know, use him as a power play specialist, use him as a fourth line, you know, energy guy with Lazai. So again, don't envy the decision makers on that one, because those, what are we list, five players. But then there's also, again, Christian Willian and Troy Stetcher that need new contracts. And I could.
A lot of names, right?
Yeah.
A lot of names.
And the difference between the unrestricted free agents and the restricted free agents is that these guys have the option of, you know, if they don't want to sign with the Kings, if they believe, if any of them believes for whatever reason that they can find a more favorable contract in a different market, they can do that. So there's really only so much the Kings can do with these players. They have to entice them to come back.
Agreed.
If they want to. That brings us to the final two topics. And these two, this is the land of speculation. And this is where I start to roll my eyes and I get uncomfortable. We'll start with trades, because the Kings have probably as much leverage when it comes to trades as any team in the National Hockey League right now, given the draft prospect pool, given the players, the picks that they could move without it really impacting what they do in the immediate future. Although I don't personally believe they should trade picks, but we saw it work with Victor Arvidsson last year, Trevor Moore, Brandon Lemieux. Now Trevor Moore was traded, you know, there were NHL players going the other direction, whereas Brandon Lemieux was just for draft picks. But we've seen this team upgraded through trade, and I know that there are a number of people who want that to happen again this year with a number of specific players in mind. I don't necessarily agree with those opinions, but they're out there.
I'll give you this. The Kings, I think, like you said, there are probably few teams that can match the Kings when it comes to what they can offer. They have, you know, right around 20, 21 million in cap space, meaning there's not a player in the league they can't afford. They have 21 draft picks over the next 3 years, which is exactly what you should have, not missing a first or a second, and they have an extra third. And I believe the second rated prospect pool in the league, a prospect pool that includes, you know, young players who have played NHL games and have proven they can play at the NHL level, as well as, you know, highly regarded 18 to 19 year olds. So in terms of creating an appealing package, few teams could probably match the Kings when it comes to that. And if you're looking at the differences between free agency and a trade, the Kings might almost be better suited in a trade, because they can outspend or out whatever, because all they have to do is come to an agreement with the other team. They don't have to compete in theory on an open market with 31 other teams who could offer an individual who has the choice, whatever that person wants. In a trade, you just have to beat out the other teams in competition with a package, and the Kings should be able to offer about as good of a package as anyone out there.
I'm going to delve into the weirdly theoretical for a moment. Well, I think one of the reasons I like trades more is that I think that it puts an organization in the proper mindset for acquisition. Like, a trade costs you something. Even if you think you're winning the trade, like even Troy Stetcher for a seventh round pick, you go, oh, well, a seventh round pick, who cares? We're in a pickle. We need veteran experience on the right side. So sure, he's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. Detroit's not going to contend. His value is low because his contract is up at the end of the year. So, okay, it's essentially a player for nothing, but it's not nothing, right? It's a seventh round pick. Matt Roy was a seventh round pick. You know, there are players out there making contributions who are seventh round picks. Victor Arvidsson, you know, oh, well, it didn't cost an NHL player. Okay, but it cost you 2 second round picks. So when you're evaluating the impact of the player, in the back of your mind is always, oh, well, it cost you something. Mm-hmm. When you sign a guy as a free agent, it does cost you stuff. It's just stuff that you never think about. And so it's never front of mind. It costs you, there's an opportunity cost because you could have spent that money elsewhere. Those minutes could have gone to a different player. It alters your salary cap. But the thought process like, oh, well, we'll bring him in and whatever, it doesn't cost anything. So who cares? And that's the part that I get scared on. Whereas a trade, it puts you in the proper mindset of like, this will cost me something. I now have to do the math of what is the cost versus what is the benefit. Whereas free agent signings, I feel like are all considered to be no risk moves. You know, maybe if you sign a guy to a huge contract, you're like, all right, well, it's going to hurt our cap. But that's a theoretical, like that's a tomorrow me problem.
Yeah.
Whereas a trade is like, oh yeah, I'm not going to have this because I'm getting that. And you
trades are a lot more interesting to talk about. That's for sure.
100%.
I mean, right? Like, who's the top free agent in the market? Maybe we'll say Johnny Gaudreau, just for conversation's sake. Johnny Gaudreau could say, I only want to play on the East Coast.
Right. Yeah.
Things are done. They can't get him. In that, like, I don't know if he does. He's from the East Coast. Maybe he wants to play on the East Coast. He went to college in Boston. He's from
That's what happened with Zdeno Chara. The Kings went right hard there, for him, and he wanted to play on the East Coast, so he wound up in Boston.
Right. And that's fair. Like, that's a player who reached open market status. He can make any decision he wants. He can say, I don't want to play for you, and I have 31 other options. That's what you run into sometimes in free agency. If that player was available via trade with 2 years left on his deal, you can get that player if you can convince the team to give him to you for the right number of assets. So I think that's the biggest difference, is when you see all these projections that have player X, Y, Z in all these spots. Well, how do you know that player, like, is even interested? Or maybe that player has a $10 million 8-year offer somewhere else. You going to match that? Or are you going to say, oh no, he's just going to sign at a team friendly rate at a team he has no ties to because it fits your narrative. I think that's I think it's something that a lot of people do when it comes to free agency. I think it's done a lot less when it comes to trades.
So let's then use that as an excuse to move into the final question, which is, will the Kings use free agency to upgrade the roster? And I'm going to dip back into Kings history, recent Kings history at this time, to sort of better illustrate what I was just getting at about the cost. And this is why I'm always hesitant to advocate for free agent signings, although I believe that Phil Deneau was a tremendous signing. I'm glad they did it. And
so it was Alex Edler, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely. And frankly, TJ Tynan, Garrett Sparks, like it all worked out great. Mm-hmm. However, in recent history, Ilya Kovalchuk was signed, and one of the selling points and one of the talking points I still see brought up was, well, it didn't cost you any assets, so it didn't matter that it didn't work out. And in the grand scheme of things, no moves matter if they work out or not, because there's always a next season. And no matter how bad the deal or the situation you find yourself in, there's a next season and a next season and a next season and a next season. So, you know, the worst trade in Kings history will ultimately one day not matter anymore, because it'll be 2040 and it'll all be distant history.
Although the Gretzky trade is still
paying
off. The Gretzky
off.
trade tree is still going somewhere in the league. Still rolling.
But the Ilya Kovalchuk deal, I screamed it as loud as I could to anybody who would listen at the time. Yes, it was a free agent signing, but no, it did not have no cost other than money. It put them in a situation with the cap where their moves had to be made. Like, when they signed Ilya Kovalchuk, that meant that either Pearson or Toffoli or Muzzin would inevitably have to be traded because of the cap implications. Now, as it turned out, all three of those guys were traded in short order for totally different reasons. But I believe that the Tanner Pearson trade was accelerated because the Ilya Kovalchuk signing put them in a spot where they only had so many options that when things didn't go well, their hands were tied. They only had so many decisions to make. And, you know, the Pearson for Hagelin trade, I think, undervalued Tanner Pearson. Now, if I remember correctly, I think they recouped the value on the Hagelin trade. I'm not going to go back and look it up right now. So again, no singular move or trade has consequences that last forever. But if the Kings were to go out and sign, I don't know who the oldest free agent on the market is right now. You know,
Jumbo Joe.
All right. Yes. If they were to sign Joe Thornton for 7 years at $10 million, that would be a terrible signing, not just because of his age. But, you know, if there was a player in his early 30s, for example, you know, who had a career year at the age of 32 or 31. And you thought to yourself, well, he's a 30 goal scorer. It'll be great. You know, who signed, who was the player Buffalo signing Jeff Skinner, right? Mm-hmm. There's an example of like, well, it didn't cost them assets. Well, okay, but it ate up a tremendous portion of their
cap. Because they traded for him first.
Oh, well, there you go. All right. whoever signed him to that deal.
It actually kind of hits both.
Yeah.
Like they traded for him and then re-signed him to a larger deal.
Okay, well, there you go. All right. So it did, I guess it did. Yeah, you're right. It did.
Kind of hits both for you on that.
But so anyway, that's my, you know, because I've been having this fight with a lot of fans about, well, should they sign this player? Should they sign that player? And the argument I always hear back is, well, this player fits their needs perfectly. And I guess my issue is, don't get seduced by what the team's needs are today, because the team's needs could be different a month from now, 2 months from now, 3 months from now. And I'd much rather have flexibility and a guy like Bjornfoot, for example, who has a wide variety of talents, rather than a guy who has one specific skill set that is suited for one specific role that the team might not need, or it might not be a priority in the near future. It's why I don't like it when teams like Florida acquire a guy like Claude Giroux, where you go, you had the top offense in the league and you went out and got an offensive player. You're upgrading an area that doesn't need. Anyway, that's a totally different thing. I'm rambling.
And at the same time, I think you could contrary that to say, like, you got to try to improve.
For sure.
And free agency and trades are a way to do that. It's not the end all be all either one. If you just go out and sign players every year, eventually it's going to come back to bite you. But, you know, you have cap space, you have assets, and you have draft picks. You can't just let them sit there either. There's a fine line, right? Like
I should have looked this up before. Sorry to jump in there. Let's take Nazem Kadri, for example, who is a fine NHL player. And I believe one of the best.
Very good NHL player.
Yeah. And one of the best at a very specific role, but he's also 31. He'll be 32 when the season starts. And this is the first time in his career that he's scored more than 61 points. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to give him a ton of money. And it's probably going to be the Philadelphia Flyers, as it frequently is. And he's not going to score 90 points for the next 5 years. I mean, odds are, maybe he will, maybe he won't, but it seems unlikely to me that he will score 87 points for the next 4 or 5 years of his career, but he will get paid as if he did. And, you know, there are players younger than him, you know, Johnny Gaudreau, for example, is what, 28? Philip Forsberg's 27. Trying to see the other big UFA players out there. David Perron probably stays in St. Louis, but my point is just
Forsberg and Gaudreau are the big forwards. Kadri is in that boat.
But they're young enough and they play a very specific role enough that I think you could argue Johnny Gaudreau will be Johnny Gaudreau wherever he goes. But anyway, that's, like I said, a lot of rambling to just say that I'm a nervous Nelly when it comes to free agency.
Fair enough.
Right.
And if you're not advocating for major change, then maybe fans could learn from you.
I doubt it. So let's wrap that up with what you just said. I'm not advocating for major change. And part of the reason I'm not is I saw the success of the Kings last year. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty clear which side of the lawn that success thrives on. And I don't think it's trying to emulate the Florida Panthers or the Colorado Avalanche. It might be 10 years from now, if Quentin Byfield, Brant Clark, you know, Arthur Kaliev, like if they grow into that kind of team, fine. But I don't think you can force a team that excelled at defense and scoring off the rush. I don't think you can sign one player and magically transform into something else. And progress is never linear. If the Kings miss the playoffs next year because every other team in the division got better, but the Kings also got better, I don't think it's a big deal. And I don't think it's an argument in favor of shooting for the moon this offseason and making a lot of risky moves, you know, to try in the pursuit of an illusory upgrade?
Well, I guess there's a lot in between those two things.
Yes.
The general theme is if the Kings don't get better from where they ended this year to where they start next year, then it's an issue. Whether
getting better point, mean?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But that's why they don't pay me. Right. But if you go in with the same thing, expecting different I think that's what you usually say. If you do the same thing over and over and expect the same outcome, then it's on you. I don't think that's what the Kings are looking at. I think that you can get better without making a single move by improving, young mm-hmm. players getting better. You can also not necessarily, you can't bank on that either. You can't bank that these players will take certain number of guys will take certain number of strides. You might need external help. And I think that there is certainly a viable argument for both.
Yeah, and while I am always, I'm conservative in nature when it comes to this particular topic, right? I always have been, I probably always will be. And when I say this topic, I mean adding players from outside of the organization. I'm generally not in favor of free agent signings, mostly because I rarely ever trust that people, the power of prediction. Right? Like, let's look at Phil Deneau. One of the things that made that signing so great is that everybody thought they knew what he was, and it turned out he was more.
Right. A lot more.
Yeah. A ton yeah. more. Right. Like, nobody mm-hmm. saw 27 goals coming. And so that far exceeded expectations. The yeah. likelihood of these players far exceeding the expectations, when you're signing a guy at the peak of expectation, it's really hard to exceed that. For example, Nazem Kadri, you sign a guy at 87, with the assumption that he's going to score 87 points a year. Not many guys score 87 points a year. It's pretty rare, even in an accelerated scoring year. So the likelihood of him meeting your expectations, much less exceeding them, seems low to me. Whereas if you sign a guy, a third line winger, who goes on to have this kind of career that Phil Deneau had, well, then so much the better. But you're also maintaining flexibility. And, if you look back again at Kings history, I think that was sort of how the Kings snuck up on people. Willie Mitchell exceeded expectations. Justin Williams exceeded expectations. Yep. And it's super simple to look 100%. Back on it and go, oh, well, Justin Williams was a cup winner. He'd scored 30 goals. It's like, yes, but he was also hurt all the time. Like, when we got him, he was Mr. Glass. He was couldn't play a full season, constantly injured. And then I think he missed like 5 games over the next 4 years or whatever, and won the Conn Smythe. It was incredible. Willie Mitchell, again, mm-hmm. concussion problems, health issues, came in and was nails. It's when they started making those swings, all right, Andre Sekera, Milan Lucic, Ben Bishop, right? That they traded depth and flexibility and futures for immediate expectation. And I guess that's where my conservative nature comes in. But like you said, they don't pay us to make those decisions. They just pay us to talk about them. So
we could circle the rest of the day on this. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But ultimately those are the 10 biggest, I don't want to say questions again, because that always implies that there's an answer, but the 10 biggest storylines, the 10 biggest factors impacting the Kings this season. What will the other teams do? What will they do with the draft? How much will Adrian Kempe sign for? How much will Mikey Anderson sign for? What will the left side of the defense look like? What will the right side of the defense look like? What will the RFA forwards core do? What will the UFA veterans do? Will they make any trades? Will there be any free agent signings? Zach, thanks so much for talking to me about this.
This is a good one.
Yeah, and we didn't bring it up, but I'll just throw it out there. Because this doesn't really impact the Kings. It's just sort of an interesting story. I will be fascinated to see whether or not Brant Clark plays for Team Canada at the WJCs, because it was canceled due to COVID I can't remember if it was December or January that it was actually canceled, but it's taking place in what, August, late July?
One of the two. I think so. Yeah. A weird, unique wrinkle into an otherwise absolutely terribly boring part of the hockey calendar.
So that's cool. No, it's going to be great. August 9th to August 20th, which would ordinarily be a complete black hole.
The most boring part of the hockey calendar. They just put a really cool event. that the Kings will likely be very well represented.
Yeah, and for anybody not aware, Brent Clark, eighth overall pick of the LA Kings, right shot defenseman, was not selected for Team Canada when the tournament was originally going to be played back in December and January, and they have a chance to reset. But as somebody pointed out, he might not, even if they did invite him, he might, out of spite, say no.
I don't think he will.
I don't think so either. But he wouldn't be playing to improve draft stock or contract or anything like that. He's got an ELC. He's, you know, anyway, just an interesting addendum. So anyway, Zach, for the next month or so leading into the draft, we're going to be doing some draft prep. We're going to be getting you Kings fans aware of who's out there to be drafted by the Kings if they do retain their picks. We're going to look back, do some deeper dives on evaluating the season that was. I know you'll have a bunch of stuff at LA Kings Insider.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, similar things, a lot more player to player on the season look backs. Easier to do that in an article, I think, than a podcast. And piggybacking off of some of your draft prep, and I'll steal a lot of your work and just
far easier. It's not stealing. It's you're accepting the past.
It's within the family.
So yeah, exactly. Yeah. So stick around, Kings fans. We'll have a ton of stuff. Also, obviously, the rain check. If any news comes out of Ontario that pertains exclusively to them, Jared and Josh will have it for you. So thanks for another season, and buckle up, because this offseason, we say this every offseason, and it's true every offseason. This is the most important offseason in Kings history.
Yes. Until the next one.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thanks, Zach. Talk to you soon, Kings fans.